We have time for questions, and there's always questions.
Okay, we'll take a couple of questions, and then we can move on to the more important thing, the feast.
I'm interested to understand that since this information is so detrimental to their worldview, how come it hasn't been destroyed so that there's no opportunity for persons to investigate it in the future?
Okay, so the question is, why hasn't this evidence been destroyed? Well, we have to understand something about how this knowledge filtering process works. It's not that scientists think about this evidence in terms of it being really true evidence that contradicts their theory, which if people knew about it would cause them to disbelieve in their theory, so therefore let's destroy it. Rather, they think, well, this evidence contradicts our theories, there must be something wrong with it. Yeah, so they don't think they're hiding, you know, true evidence. They think they're being responsible scientists. That's what they think. You know, they think there's got to be something wrong with this. You know, it had to have slipped down through some crack, or the dating methods were wrong. Something's got to be wrong with it. Has to be wrong with it. And therefore, they figure they're just doing their duty by not talking about it, not writing about it, not giving it any attention at all, because why should they give attention to something that's obviously not true? So what they will try to do is resist any suggestion that this evidence is to be taken seriously, is to be considered. But I will say that although what I'm saying is generally true, there are some cases where evidence does go missing mysteriously. For example, that particular object I showed you, the grooved metallic sphere from South Africa, the one that's shown in the photograph. You know, there was a photograph, we got a photograph of that from the director of the museum in which it's held. It's held in a museum of natural history in Klerksdorp, South Africa. And it's published in Forbidden Archaeology. So after Forbidden Archaeology was published, there was a television producer in Holland who wrote to us and said, well, I'd really like to go to South Africa and film that object. So we got in touch with the director of the museum who had sent us the photograph and told him, well, there's a television producer from Holland who wants to come down there and film it. And he said, well, unfortunately, the object has been stolen from the museum. So that could be a case, an example of what you're talking about. But in general, the process of knowledge filtering works in a more subtle way. You know, they don't think they're hiding true evidence. They think, well, we're just not talking about stuff that's obviously not true. Something else.
Thank you for the presentation, increasing the faith for me and the Shastras. I have a question about if I want to take my son to like a museum, or you know, he gets exposed to all the other Darwinian theories, etc. So how do I present that, or how do I introduce that to him if I'm in a position to, if I have to do that?
Okay, the comment is about museums, and museums are specifically designed, modern museums are specifically designed to influence children, you know, to convince them of these things. The designers in the museum know that intelligent parents, you know, they want to give their children some, quote, educational experience. So on a Sunday, if you go to a major museum of natural history, mostly you'll see families with children there. And, you know, they see, you know, the children see the little monkey, and they see the getting, you know, the next statue in the exhibit getting a little bigger, ape man. And, you know, so they, these museums are specifically designed to brainwash children, literally. Because if they get an idea early in their life, it tends to stick. So I think one thing that needs to be done is that in the public tax-supported museums, there should be a diversity of exhibits. Yeah. You know, they shouldn't allow one group, you know, even a majority group of scientists, to just use the public tax money to just push their idea on everybody, especially when Gallup surveys have shown most of the American people don't accept the Darwinian theory of evolution for a variety of reasons. So I think that's one thing that needs to be done, that educators and politicians need to ultimately have some diversity in the education system and the museums. Another thing that we need to do is have our own museums. And in Sridhar Mayapur, West Bengal, Srila Prabhupada wanted a temple of Vedic planetarium, which would give not only exhibits that show the Vedic cosmology, which is different somewhat from the modern astronomical version of the universe, but he also wanted other scientific exhibits there, which would give a correct view of human origins. And I'm part of the planning of the exhibits, you know, for that museum. I'm just one of several Bhaktivedanta Institute members and other devotee scholars who are going to be involved in that. So hopefully, if we're able to make exhibits that can be, you know, understood by people, and we really want to do that, including children, because, like, if you see any museum, busloads of children are going through. So we would want the same thing in Sridhar Mayapur at the big complex that is currently being constructed there, that busloads of children will be going through there and getting a proper understanding of human origins and antiquity, among other things. So once those exhibits are produced, it should be possible to duplicate them and have them in other cities as well. So there's not a whole lot we can offer you in terms of alternative museums right now, but it's definitely something that we're planning on doing. Anything else? Maybe just one more and then we'll break for the feast.
Hello. I have two-part question. Number one, there is a notion that people who live in different yugas, like Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, they were different people physically. They were very tall. They were like just up to 3 meters tall, even higher. Mm-hmm. Did you actually need any evidence supporting that? That is
first question.
First question.
Let me respond to that first, because I'll forget it if you give a second question. There are many reports of large-sized human bones having been found. But if you see what I do, I like to go into the museums, I like to see these things, because if I'm going to be presenting them to skeptical audiences, I like to have some verification. of reports, at least some of them. If I'm able to verify some reports, then I can speak about other reports about the same type of topic. So there are in the scientific literature reports of large size human bones having been found. However, up to this moment, I have not been able to personally verify any of them. Now, on the web, sometimes we see pictures of big skeletons with little humans standing next to them. However, all of those that I've seen have proven to be either unverifiable or demonstrably hoaxes, you know, Photoshop. You know, there was one famous picture of a large human skeleton lying in the ground, and there are little scientists all around digging. There was one scientist standing behind the skull with a shovel. And it's obvious from the photograph of the skeleton that the light source, the sun, is high and to the rear. And this man is standing behind the skull. He should have been casting a shadow directly across the skull. There was no shadow. So I could tell, okay, this is something that's been put together, and it was later shown to be a fact. You know, it's shown the actual pictures that were put together to make this. Now, I do believe that in the past there were large-sized human beings on this planet, because Shastra says it. You know, the Puranas say that, and in past ages, living things, including human beings, were bigger. But if I'm going to try to present evidence for that, I would like to be able to verify at least one case of it in terms of human skeletal remains. A few years ago, I thought I had my first opportunity to do that. There was a businessman in New Zealand who read my books and liked them, and he invited me to come to New Zealand and give some lectures. So when I got off the plane in Auckland, he said, "Tomorrow, we're going to see something very interesting." He said, "A friend of mine, since childhood, is one of the directors of the Auckland Museum of Natural History, and he's going to show us the skeleton of a human being over 10 feet tall from a Pacific island." So I thought, okay, finally, I'm going to see one of these things. And we went to the museum the next morning. We met the man, and he began taking us around the museum, showing us the dinosaurs, showing us this, showing us that. And finally, we said, "Well, what about the large-sized human skeleton?" He said, "I'm sorry, we can't see it." So I had to wonder, well, what happened in 24 hours that he told his friend since childhood, you know, that he was going to show this skeleton, and when we came there, he didn't. You know. I've also heard, for example, when I was in Russia, people told me in Samarkand there's a mosque where they have the tomb of some saint, you know, over, you know, 20 feet tall. But I'm not able to verify that, you know, myself. You know. So there are many reports of such things. I haven't been able to verify them. I do believe that it's true. But before I present these things to skeptical audiences, I would like to have some verification. And, you know, it's even just part of ordinary science that before 5 or 10,000 years ago, most living things were bigger than they are today. For example, I live in California, and they have the California redwood trees there in the mountains. Some of them are over 5,000 years old. They're the biggest living things on Earth. They're huge. They're enormous. So I think in the past, things were bigger, including human beings. But I would like a verifiable case before I start, you know, publicly promoting that in terms of evidence. So your second question?
Well, the second was, there is a theory that Vedic culture in India was formed by ancient race that came from north, long upon the time. Do you support this theory? And if yes, then when did it happen? How many years ago?
Well, I don't support that theory. From what I can see, the Puranas mention a human presence has always been present in, you know, the Indian subcontinent. There are places there that have always been mentioned. So just briefly, no, I don't support that idea that the Vedic culture came from outside, you know, what's now known as India, and then migrated into it. Rather, from Shastra we get the idea that it went out. You know, like Parshuram, he drove out, you know, renegade kings who went to other parts of the world. You know, that's more in line with, you know, my thoughts on this. So, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Just reminding you, when you go out to take prasadam or come back down, there are books on display just outside the gift shop.